This is Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Farad. 40 years ago, a novel and then a TV miniseries captured the attention of American culture. The novel was Roots. The author was Alex Haley, and the TV series drew over 100 million viewers to its final episode, telling the story of African-American heritage through the era of slavery.
All you have to do is tell me your name.
I'm Kunta Kinte,
son of a... Your name is Toby. Now tell me your name.
I'm Kunta Kinte.
That's not your name.
Our next guest tells the story behind the story, how Roots came to be, why it got such a huge response, and what it tells us about the way we think of the history of slavery.
Matthew Delmont is with us. He's a history professor at Arizona State University. His newest book is Making Roots, A Nation Captivated. Matthew, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, looking back 40 years, how much was the nation captivated by Roots?
It was really like nothing anyone had ever seen before on American television. There had been histories of slavery and histories of African-American history in the United States, but no one had ever seen this in mainstream culture. The book, when it came out, sold over 1 million copies almost immediately, and then when it broadcast in 1977, over 100 million people watched it. This is just before the advent of cable, so it reached American living rooms in ways that had just never been seen before. And what I think was important about it was the way in which it foregrounded African-American experiences, so making African-Americans the protagonists of the story, talking about things like the Middle Passage, things that a lot of people still had never heard about in their school education before, and bringing that to American audiences over 8 consecutive nights in a just sort of a phenomenal TV event package is one of the reasons it influenced people so greatly.
That bit that we just played of the lashing, it's a moment that stood out, but that was just a part of Roots, as you point out. This is just a few moments in an eight-episode series. Can you talk us through the story that's told in Roots?
Yeah, so one of the things I think scholars and sort of popular audiences have overlooked about Roots is the fact that it was really about the emotions of African-American characters. So it traces Alex Haley's family. It's partly fact, partly fiction, but traces a family story over multiple generations. And I think that's what's so important, that it's not just about brutality. There are some horrific scenes in the series, but it's about understanding what it took for these generations of African-Americans to survive the capture in Africa, the transport to America via the Middle Passage, but then passing down these stories, passing down these legacies and histories, and really how these enslaved African-American characters interact with each other and communicate that history and communicate these family stories over generations. I think that's something that people forget when they just focus on the whipping scene. And one kind of interesting thing that I didn't realize until I got into the research is, you know, that whipping scene actually isn't in the book. That was added to the TV series by a white screenwriter named Bill Blinn because they wanted a way to sort of make this tension of Kunta Kinte trying to maintain his identity, make that resonate on screen. So just one of the sort of many fascinating things about what it took to translate the story from the page to the screen.
And you write in the book, Alex Haley, and you just mentioned, he was not the first person to tell the story of slavery in the United States, not the first African-American writer either. Why did the book Roots and the miniseries get so much attention where others had not?
I think one thing is, I hadn't realized this until I got into the research, that Alex Haley, he initially started this project in 1964. Initially, it was called Before This Anger. He initially planned to just focus on his hometown of Henning, Tennessee in the 1920s and 30s. As the project develops, he starts talking to his relatives, starts doing more research. It becomes a story about the history of slavery. But then he goes on a speaking tour. He's speaking all across the country from the late 1960s to the 70s in Wisconsin. He speaks at University of Wisconsin-Madison, at Marquette. Over 1 million people have already heard this story before the book cover comes out. I think that's one of the important things that helps to create this groundswell of interest in it, that people for over a decade are waiting to see when's the book going to come out, when's the TV series going to come out. So I think that's important. And then I think secondarily, it hits kind of an American zeitgeist. So it's just after the bicentennial. People are very interested in our nation's history. And it really presents it in a savvy way that was appealing to bring in black viewers, but also trying to not alienate or try to appeal to white viewers as well. David Wolper, who brought the series to ABC, was very explicit that if this became pegged as just a black history show, it was going to turn off white viewers and they weren't going to watch. So they cast prominent white celebrities like Ed Asner, got them in there very early in the series. And it was a very kind of savvy back and forth to try to reach the largest possible audience. And I'll say Alex Haley was always in favor of that. He was someone who wanted to bring the story, whether it was on the lecture circuit, whether it was in the book, or whether it was in the TV series, to the most people possible, both American audiences and then internationally as well.
Talking to Matthew Delmont, author of the book Making Roots, A Nation Captivated. And Matthew, you mentioned that this is partly based on his Alex Haley's personal story, his genealogy. There was research, but it was also fiction at the same time. Can you talk about the mix of fact and fiction and how the book and the TV series approached that?
Absolutely. So Alex Haley dubbed it faction, so a mix of fact and fiction. But it got kind of complicated when Doubleday and when ABC started to promote it. So Doubleday emphasized that it was nonfiction because they thought that would sell better. While Haley always said, you know, I was mixing fact and fiction, when Doubleday promotes it, they call it nonfiction. When ABC brings it to television, they start by saying this is based on a true story. So I think that has kind of clouded the memory of how the TV series was presented. From Haley's perspective, what he was a great storyteller, and he was really interested in drawing on whatever sources he could to make the most compelling and captivating story. So he did do quite a bit of research in the Gambia in West Africa, where he had identified as being the most likely place that his ancestors had come from. But he was also excited and willing to sort of take in whatever information fit the story he was trying to create. So I think this is where I'm a historian, and historians have gotten a little bit too hung up on, is it really true or is it a story? I think we should embrace the fact that it was an amazing story and think that's why people responded so positively. And one thing that was interesting for me, sort of looking through these archives, is I could see where he was drawing on factual information and then where he was messing with things a little bit and where he was willing to sort of take fictional liberties to make the story more compelling. He kind of thought of it as a big puzzle, and he wanted the pieces to fit together in the best way possible. And I think that his skills as a storyteller is what I think made the story resonate so much. I think if he had stuck too close to the facts, this would be kind of an academic history that wouldn't have captured nearly the audience that it ended up capturing.
Part of his story is his genealogy, and I've got people in my family, a white family, that have done genealogy. It takes work, but a lot of that information is out there. For someone who has slaves in their ancestry, there was a conscious attempt to destroy any connection to that African heritage. So if somebody wanted to do that step-by-step reconstruction, it seems like it'd be really hard to do.
Exactly. I mean, it's important to remember this is before digitization of most records, census records. It's before DNA testing that he would be able to draw on. And for African Americans, there is a purposeful erasure of history. The part of the Middle Passage was a rupturing of histories, a rupturing of family stories. That's what made this so compelling to Alex Haley, and that's what made it so compelling to African Americans. The book itself became something like a Bible in African American households because it was not just Alex Haley's story, but it was a testament to the fact that you could tell African-American stories that would go back to Africa and really root African-Americans as fully American, that African-Americans had been in the country longer than most European-Americans have. That was a powerful message in the 1970s, and I think it's still a powerful message today.
And you mentioned that in many ways the book and the TV miniseries were pitched in large part toward a white audience, and there was a moment, LeVar Burton, the star as a young Kunta Kinte in the Roots miniseries, he was almost rejected. There were objections that he looked too African. His lips looked too African. Can you talk about some of the thinking that went into the casting there?
Absolutely. So one of the things I think is important to recognize is the series never would have made it to television if it had not been pitched for white audiences. That was the nature of the television in the 1970s, and I think it's still the nature of broadcast television today. I think we see more on the cable networks, more of an appeal to African-American viewers, but I think it's important to sort of take the television miniseries for what it was, and David Wolper was always explicit that it had to reach a white audience. But it makes for this very uncomfortable sort of balancing act that it's one of the most important African-American stories we have, but it's one that they felt like they had to foreground white characters to make it acceptable. And there were, as you note, strong concerns about the look of African-American characters. So it's very bizarre that you would want to cast someone who is meant to be captured from Africa and then worry about them having two Africana features. I think what you can say in the story's benefit is that even though it was very much pitched to white audiences, it had more African-American acting talent than anything that had been seen in generations, and really almost anything that you see today. Actresses like Cicely Tyson and Maya Angelou, Leslie Uggams, actors like LeVar Burton and John Amos, that the number of African-American actors and the amount of screen time they have and the fully fleshed-out characters, the three-dimensional characters you see, that's still a powerful testament to the show, even though they did shoehorn someone like Ed Asner in there in the first 7 minutes to make sure that white viewers wouldn't turn out. The story itself is very much a balancing act of telling black history while also appealing to white viewers.
We're talking to Matthew Delmont. His new book is Making Roots, A Nation Captivated. He tells the story behind the story of the novel and the TV miniseries Roots.
You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Did you read the book when it came out, or did you watch the miniseries? What did you think of it at the time? Have you watched the remake that came out this year? Do you have questions about the book or the author Alex Haley or the TV miniseries? Call 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking to Matthew Delmont, author of Making Roots, A Nation Captivated. He tells the story of the book and the miniseries that brought the story of American slavery into popular culture.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you remember reading, watching, talking about Roots when it came out? Do you remember the sensation? What did you think of it at the time? Did you watch the remake that came out this year? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Brendan is with us in Madison. Brendan, hi.
Hi. So I grew up, I'd seen the LeVar Burton miniseries, but I didn't actually read Roots until I was a Peace Corps volunteer in the Gambia. So it was actually extremely interesting for me. But I'll say one thing that really troubles me about Roots, because I do very much see the importance culturally of telling this story about, you know, African-Americans having this important history and this experience, was extremely important, extremely, you know, affirming for African-Americans, and it still is. But I was just so troubled by just really page for page and the overall characterization of both Mandinka culture and Mandinka people as I read that while I was living and working with a Mandinka village. And it's something that I really struggle with, because I don't want to disavow that importance, but at the same time, that, as well as all the plagiarism charges and kind of other problems with the research Haley did, and also the effect on the kind of the use by the Gambian government, which is very oppressive in the Gambia by the Roots of the Roots legacy, all kind of really problematize that. So that's something I just wanted to say. I really struggle with both the cultural value, but also all of the really problematic issues with the Gambian side of the book.
Brendan, thanks a lot for that call. And Matt, Brendan is not the first one to struggle with these issues, is he?
No, and I think he points to some things that are really fascinating about the book. And what I think is so captivating about this story is that it's a messy history, and that's what I loved about trying to put the story together. So focusing on the Gambia, one thing that has gotten lost is Alex Haley, one of his primary sources for understanding what the Gambia was about was actually a Scottish explorer named Mungo Park, who was there in the 1700s. So thinking about how did Alex Haley come to write, in some ways, kind of an outdated version or sort of an ethnography of what was going on in the Gambia, it's because he was looking at someone who had been there in the 1700s. So I think the caller is on point in thinking about the way in which Haley's version of the Gambia was not exactly truthful. I think the other thing that is interesting is one of the reasons Haley received such a warm welcome in the Gambia is they were a newly independent nation, and they saw his overtures there, his visits there, as being one way to increase tourism and to try to get more people to come visit the Gambia, bring particularly African-American heritage tourists. So when he goes there, the first time he visits, he explains what he's looking for. By the next time he comes there, they have a series of people who are more than eager to tell him the stories he wants to hear. And I think, again, this is where we see kind of a blurring of fact and fiction, that he does hear from someone who presents himself as an oral historian in the Gambia a story of Haley's family clan going back to Kunta Kente, but it's most likely the case that that person told Haley the story because he already knew what Haley wanted to hear. So there's a complex kind of interplay of who wanted to get what out of this interaction, who wanted to get what out of the story. I mean, I think Gambia had their own sort of political interest in telling Haley the story he wanted to hear.
Brendan, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Nikita in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi, this is Nikita. So I just wanted to say that I have seen the original Roots, and then I also saw the remake that came out. And I just wanted to make a comment about how when I was a little kid, my dad decided that we were going to make like a big family event out of it. And it was kind of a big deal for me because I'm from an interracial family. My mom is white and my dad is black. And so I don't know, like, it was life-changing for us to be able to see, like, the complex history of where we come from in America, you know, coming from both sides. It just really impacted me, and it gave me a sense of pride of knowing, like, I come from somewhere, too.
Nikita, thank you so much for sharing that story. And Matt, is that something you think was a common response from people with African-American heritage in this country, a pride in knowing that there is this deep story that was as rich as anything else anyone else had?
Absolutely. And I think that's the importance of rooting this as an American story. I mean, people have criticized Roots for maybe presenting an immigrant version of African-American history, and I don't go along with that. I think the story of both the book and the TV series presents the Middle Passage in pretty excruciating detail. But then I think it roots that story as an American story. I think that's powerful for African-Americans to hear. It was at the time in the 1970s. I think it's still powerful today. And I think the caller's experience of watching this as a family event, I think that's something that I heard time and time again from just general viewers, but also from scholars who, you know, this was one of their first entry points into thinking about African-American history, that some of this work had been done, it was circulated in college classrooms, but it hadn't yet trickled down to high school curriculum or school curriculum. And so this was really a family experience, that they were allowed to stay past their bedtimes and see this together, and it encouraged people to talk about race and talk about slavery. And I think that's one of the strongest legacies of this, is that our nation has always struggled to reckon with this history. And I think a popular culture product that, whatever its flaws might be, can get people to talk in their churches, in bars, in classrooms and workplaces about these uncomfortable subjects in meaningful ways, I think that's really a powerful testament.
Nikita, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Matthew Delmont about his new book, Making Roots, A Nation Captivated. We got an email from Edie who says, as a young boy growing up in Ghana, our high school in 1983 went to the home of a wealthy businessman in the north of the country to watch the whole series over the course of a couple semesters. As a young boy of 13 years, I didn't grasp the full import of the series at the time. Looking back, he writes, it was important in shaping my understanding of African-American history. So it sounds like an immigrant to the United States now learned about African-American history before he came here from Roots, Matthew.
Yeah, it had a tremendous international footprint as well. So it aired in Germany, in Japan. There are great stories from China about people seeing connections between their own histories there and what was going on in Roots. It was actually banned in South Africa, and it had to be shown furtively. Its cultural influence can't be overstated. I think that's what's so powerful about the time in which it came out. It reached so many people in the United States, then so many people internationally, and really presented a different vision of what American history could be about. And I think that's why I think television can be so powerful, that it just can succeed and can reach people in a way that books or academic histories can never do. And I think that I'm comfortable with the liberties that that Haley and ABC took in order to reach this much wider audience.
Well, and I've seen people hold Roots up as a counterpoint to the images of the slavery era that we get from Gone with the Wind, still watched today, and Birth of a Nation, less watched today, I think. Do you think this is an important counterpoint in that sense?
I do. One of the kind of crazy things to think about is before Roots became the most watched television series of all time, Gone with the Wind was actually the most watched thing on television of all time. It was aired over two nights by NBC in 1976. And so to think about that, this racist film from the 1930s being the most watched thing on television in 1976 gives you a sense of where people's heads were at. That's what Roots was trying to compete against. The quote that was said about Birth of a Nation by Woodrow Wilson, it's probably apocryphal, but it makes sense. He said it was like history written with lightning. And I think Roots was trying to compete at that scale. It was trying to present an epic vision of African-American history that would compete with something like Gone with the Wind and something like Birth of a Nation. And I think it's powerful and should be remembered in that regard.
So you've written this book. It's out this year. The remake of Roots also came out this year. What is it about now? Why are we looking back at Roots today? Is it suddenly culturally meaningful again after maybe fading a little bit?
I think so. I mean, I think, unfortunately, the racial landscape in our country, the amount of racism, the police shootings we have, many of these issues that were going on in the 60s and 70s that sparked Alex Haley to think about writing the story the first time are still with us in the present, and people are still trying to grapple with slavery as a foundational component of our nation, that we're a nation that has been built on this legacy of slavery, but we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to reckon with it. And I think the new version of Roots, I think it was well received because it gave people an opportunity to talk about this in a cultural form. And I think that's why it was remade. And I think that's why it was, for a cable production, was pretty well watched and pretty well received.
The original Roots got people talking for a while anyway. Do you see us having a sustained conversation about the legacy of slavery, segregation, the civil rights era, and beyond?
I hope so. I mean, that's my whole goal as a scholar and as a historian. But I think it takes work. I think one of the legacies of the first Roots is that it had this huge cultural moment in 1977, and then it really largely had faded by the late 70s or early 1980s. People went back to their business. They started making other TV miniseries about things like the Thornbirds. Things were not historically relevant in the same way Roots was. So I think these things provide openings. They provide openings to start conversations and then continue those conversations in informal and formal environments. And I think it encourages us to make connections between these culture productions, these books and TV series, and then the things that are in our lives. I think the connections that I hope people will make are, what does it look like in terms of race or the history of slavery, history of racial discrimination in your own city, in your own place, in high schools and neighborhoods? And it doesn't have to go all the way back to the slavery era. I mean, we can look at federal mortgage redlining in the 1930s and 40s in the United States, and that's a through line or connection to better understand and reckon with these troubling histories of race in our country.
We'll leave it there for now. Matt, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been talking to Matthew Delmont. He's a professor of history at Arizona State University. We've been talking about his newest book. It's called Making Roots, A Nation Captivated. In the book, as we've been talking about, he looks at the novel and the TV miniseries Roots. Still time for you to share your thoughts on the topic, by the way. If you remember watching it, if you remember reading it, if you've watched it again lately, if you watched the remake, we'd love to hear what you think. You can head over to the Central Time Facebook page and share your thoughts there. A link to some information about the book there as well. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let us know your memories of Roots 4 decades later on the Central Time Facebook page.